Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and we're going to start the show today and continue talking about spies, code breakers, and covert operations going on during World War II today. We'll also be looking at the role subterfuge played on the attack on Pearl Harbor, and our guest is Neil Kagan. He is the editor of a great new book. It's The Secret History of World War II, Spies, Codebreakers, and Covert Operations. Neil is head of Kagan & Associates. It's a firm specializing in designing and producing innovative illustrated books. And at his former position as publisher, managing editor, and director of new product development for Time Life Books, he created many book series, including the award-winning Voices of the Civil War, Our American Century, and What Life Was Like. You may have some questions about this, the secrets of World War II. Maybe you had a relative involved in those. I hope you'll join in the conversation. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can send us an email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. And Neil Kagan, welcome to the show. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
I'm delighted to be here, Larry.
You have a great publishing background and a lot of history involved. What draws you to that? What draws you to history?
Well, you know, when I started with Time Life Books, about 42 years ago, I guess at this point. It was a long time ago.
Long time ago.
I actually came in as a photographer. I had won an honorable mention in a Life magazine photo contest, which drew me to Time Life Books, and I had never realized that there was a possible career in editing and creating illustrated books. So when I started to work there, the very first assignment I had was to do research for a new series on World War II. And the assignment was to go to the Life Picture Collection in New York. It was on the 28th floor. And to look at all the World War II photographs that were done by the classic Life photographers. So that was my initiation, kind of a trial by fire, into the history of World War II. And it was a kind of a lesson for a lifetime. It really showed you the power of pictures and showed you the power of storytelling. And also the power of research, all of which you need to create these illustrated books.
Well, I find the photographs in this book are amazing. I have never seen probably 99% of them before, and the stories that come along with them is really something. What was the catalyst for this new book about spies and covert operations?
Well, I mean, it was a challenge to think about. When you think about World War II and you create an image in your mind of D-Day, of Iwo Jima, of the Battle of the Bulge, all these incredible human endeavors to overcome incredible odds and survive. But behind that, if you were to peel that away, there is an entire world of secrecy that dominated behind the scenes for the entire war and before the war, and actually led into the Cold War after the war. So the challenge here was to, can you create a book and can you show anything that represents what went on behind the scenes? And that was our goal, and that's what we set out to do. And as it turns out, there are over 700 illustrations in the book. So we did succeed at documenting the evidence of the event.
You sure did. Oh, man. And maybe for our listeners, you could talk about how you've organized the book, because you cover the war, the entire war, from both the Pacific and Europe.
Yeah, I think it's just kind of a way of looking at things. I always believed, and my author, Stephen Hislop, who's an incredible writer, we kind of collaborated on the organization, and we both agreed the way to do this is that to always let the reader know where they stand in the overt war. So when we're describing covert activity, we segue into the overt war as often as needed. So you always know where you stand with the milestones that you already know. So the book is arranged in kind of a chronological order and by episodes that war in Europe, the war breaking out in the Pacific and so forth. And once we had that basic organization, then what I do as editor, it's kind of like a challenge between your, if you were in worked in a museum, you would be a curator. If you were in film, you would be the producer, the director. And so you have to say, well, how can we best tell the stories? And we decided to have narrative chapters separated by illustrated essays. And there were so many stories that we turned up that we decided to create smaller stories in these sidebars that are called War in the Shadows or spy sidebars that run throughout the book when there is a mention of a subject in the running text.
Yeah, I love those sidebars. They really add a whole lot to the entire story that you're telling. What, you know, think about all these stories. Was there one that surprised you the most that you came upon?
Well, I mean, there were big surprises and there were little surprises. There are several really incredible, big stories that we have. There's one about the Russian spy, Richard Sergei, who was a Russian spy in Tokyo, and he was able to foreshadow events because of his connections in Tokyo and radio those events to Moscow, to Stalin. One was that the imminent invasion of Russia by Germany, and Stalin was just too paranoid to accept that. There was a non-aggression pact between Russia and Germany. Stalin did not accept Sergei's direction, and the results were devastation. The second time was when the Germans reached Moscow, and in December of 1941, and at that time he said no, the Japanese are not going to attack from the Pacific, and Stalin pulled troops back to Moscow from the Pacific, and they turned the Germans back. And by doing that, they changed the course of the entire war. That was one that was incredible, but there are others. The Japanese, deciphering the Japanese secrets, turning the events around from Pearl Harbor, was an incredible story, actually equal to that of the breaking the Enigma code in Europe.
Yeah, you do a really nice job of laying out how that all happened. It's really, really something to read about for sure. Well, the foreword of the book was written by Ken Rendell, the author, the founder and executive director of the Museum of World War II in Boston. Tell us about him and how he was able to collect all these artifacts that we see.
Well, Ken is another kind of veteran of the subject of World War II, and we kind of hit it off. And he actually has been collecting for over 50 years. He's a visionary collector. And he is in the course of creating, turning his collection into his own museum. It's a nonprofit museum, and we created a collaboration where he opened his collection up to us to publish in this book. So we publish about a third of the illustrations out of 700 are from Ken's collection. And it's just incredible because the artifacts cover every aspect of the secret war. There are documents, there are plans for D-Day, there is Patton's secret map for the invasion of Sicily. There's a baby carriage that I'm looking at that has a trap door with a radio and some sabotage equipment.
It's amazing. Absolutely amazing photographs. I want to talk about some more of them. Just to remind you, as you're listening in today to our conversation, Neil Kagan is our guest today, and he was editor of the book we're talking about. It's called The Secret History of World War II. And, of course, you're listening during our Wisconsin Public Radio membership drive, and I'm, of course, Larry Mueller. Jennifer Dargan joins me, and she's here to help me tell you about what's going on here at WPR. Our single largest source of funding is listener support. That means that in this season of giving, your gift is so important. So I hope you'll take a few minutes right now to support the programs you count on with your year-end gift at WPR.org. or at 888-202-2552. And Jennifer, we're doing fairly well here, aren't we?
Hi, Larry. Yeah, we are doing great. I'm really enjoying this conversation, and we're going to get back to it really quickly. But just want to give a couple quick updates. Last hour, we heard from 15 new and returning members. And before we do anything else, we want to say thank you for those pledges. Some good news about what's happening next, though, is right now we have a dollar-for-dollar match. And I know you love these, Larry.
I love these.
Up to $2,500. This generous match comes from 9XM Leadership Circle members, including Dale and Winnie Hutchins from DePere. And it means that they're going to match every dollar that you give.
Up to $2,500. It's their way of encouraging you to join them in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. So right now, you can double your support for the programs you love. Give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Right. Maybe one of the things that you love about Wisconsin Public Radio is that we're commercial free. Well, that means that we depend on other sources of funding. So state, federal, and corporate funding are all really
important.
There's another source that's really important, too.
Yeah, the single largest piece of the budget pie comes from you. Your support makes all the difference. It's the backbone of our funding. So I hope you'll make your pledge right now at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
And pledging is so quick and easy. And when you become a sustainer, you really simplify your donation. Sustaining membership is when you make automatic monthly gifts from your bank account or your credit card.
And that support will renew automatically every year, so your membership is always current. So pick an amount that works for you, maybe, let's say, $10 a month, and then become a sustainer right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Here at Wisconsin Public Radio, we've been partnering with food banks throughout Wisconsin since 2010 to help those facing hunger. President and CEO of Second Harvest Food Bank, Dan Stein, explains the statewide need and how your gift can make a difference in your community.
What we're finding is whether it's rural or urban, the percentage of people in need is pretty similar. Nearly 700,000 different people sought help last year and struggled with hunger. 1 in 8 that live here, 1 in 5 of those are children. And that means about 250,000 children across the state struggled with hunger sometime last year.
This drive, when you give $5, $10, or $20 a month, consider asking for a food bank thank you gift. It's your chance to do two good things at once.
I hope you'll go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your pledge during this year-end membership drive. Larry Mueller here with Jennifer Dargan asking for your support of WPR. And maybe your gift is $10 or $15 a month. Whatever amount you choose, that certainly is the right amount.
The amount is up to you, and giving takes just a few minutes of your time. You tell us your name, your contact information, how much you'd like to give, and how you'd like to pay. It's that easy. And when you become a sustainer, it's even easier. You set up ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or your credit card. So please take the next few minutes to support the station that you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
This has happened to me, probably happened to you as well, where you found yourself hovering near the radio. You get drawn into a great discussion. You need to get somewhere, but that discussion is just too interesting to ignore. I was sitting in my driveway listening to a WPR program when I got home from work, and the next door neighbor came over and wondered if there was something wrong with me because I was still in the car. I tell you what, I appreciate certainly our guest today knows a lot, and all of the guests we have, I think, are equally good. I hope it's happened to you that you've hovered near the radio, make your pledge of support at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And many of our listeners wait for this time during the pledge drive, the time that we have a dollar-for-dollar match. We have one in effect right now from 9XM Leadership Circle members, including Dale and Winnie Hutchins from DePere. Thank you to them.
Thank you.
Your gift of $50 can turn into $100. $100 will turn into $200 and so on. So please take advantage of this match right now. Double your support for WPR programs when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You first joined the WPR community as a listener. You tune in every day, and after a while, it's time to join the community as a donor. I hope you'll help us fund right now the great programs on WPR. It's really a group effort.
Right. We do this together, one pledge at a time, $1 at a time. If you've never given before, you could start with a donation of $5 or $10 a month. It's really easy to set up at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And a big thank you if you've already renewed or make ongoing monthly gifts as a sustainer. That's very helpful. Listeners who renew and monthly sustainers are really the backbone of WPR.
Right. We cannot say thank you enough. If you haven't given yet, please join the thousands of other wonderful WPR members by donating now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Our dollar-for-dollar match is still in effect, and we have a long way to go. I haven't done the math on it here yet, but it's a long way. We
got
still
a lot
have
of money to go.
A lot of money to go. So yeah. Give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, and your support of WPR is going to go twice as far.
And in this season of giving, you can support the radio that you love and do something extra. You can choose one of the food bank gifts when you give $5, $10, or $20 a month. So give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And thank you so much if you've already contributed. Coming up at 2 o'clock today, Kathleen Dunn will speak with the author of a book called Anatomy of a Song, the oral history of 45 iconic hits that changed rock, R&B, and pop. That's at 2 o'clock. Right now, visiting with Neil Kagan, he is the editor of the book, The Secret History of World War II, Spies, Codebreakers, and Covert Operations. A fascinating book, and I'm really glad that we have him with us today to talk about it. And I hope you'll join in. Maybe you have an experience to share, a relative who had an experience during World War II, and maybe it was of a spy nature, maybe it wasn't. I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you. And Neil, we were talking about the some of the photos that were in the book. You mentioned a few of them. There are a couple that struck me in terms of just amazing were the explosive rats and the microfilm in canned food.
Yes, it is amazing. You know. First of all, all of these objects, you know, you can't even conceive that they were real, but they were. The explosive rats was designed by the British SOE, which was the agency created to support the resistance, and it was an explosive device inside a rat, and it would be near a fire, like a fireplace, or it would be in a train near the coal car. And the idea was that somebody would pick it up or shovel it into the coal, and then the train would explode. Or you'd put it into the fireplace, and you would get rid of some German general or something. So that was an amazing thing.
It was an actual rat that they skinned. I think it was skinned, and then filled up with this bomb.
That's right. That's right. And they had all kinds of things. They created false footprints. They were like rubber feet that would make your boots disappear if you were in a beach situation. They got forgers out of prison to create documents, and we show a passport of Adolf Hitler with a stamped on it that he was Jewish, as a kind of just to show that they could create anything that you wanted them to create.
Yeah, I was. Yeah. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, the other thing was, this was serious business because, you know, you mentioned microfilm in a canned food. When you were, the Germans absolutely dominated Europe and you were living in such fear. This is something that we really have to put ourselves in that position. And information, anytime you could get information from outside that sphere, it was golden. So hidden radios of any kind, any place you could hide a document in case the Gestapo came into your home, places to hide poisoning. If you were a spy, you would rather take poison than find yourself in the hands of the Gestapo. So this was indeed they're very unique, but it represented the seriousness and the horror of living through this event.
Yeah, I thought so too. And when you opened the can, whichever end you opened it, you'd see food in the can, but in the middle of the can there was a container, kind of, that contained the message. So if somebody opened up the can on either end, they would see that there's food in here, but there was also. There were also the messages. They were kind of some ingenious devices, for sure.
Well, there were gadget shops on all sides. I mean, the Germans could hide an explosive device in a talcum powder can. They had a belt buckle that turned into a four-cylinder pistol. The Americans had there was a great story. I went to the CIA museum, and they also opened up their collection to me for this book to do an essay on the OSS, which was the precursor to the CIA. And there was a great story about the inventing a silence pistol, and the head of Donovan, the head of the OSS, going into FDR's office, and FDR was on the phone, and he shoots it into a pillow, and you can't hear a thing. And FDR turns around and he said, "Man, you're the only one that I would let in my office with a gun like that," because you couldn't hear anything, not a single sound. The gadget shops were invented during this period.
Oh, San emailed to ask if Neil, if you're familiar with the photograph of Myron Davis. He covered the Pacific for Life magazine from 42 to 46. San says Myron was a good friend of his. Remember Myron, you know, Davis?
I'm not really sure that it comes to mind. I may remember his photographs more than I remember the individual.
Yeah, that's understandable for sure. And one other one, Laura in La Crescent, Minnesota, emailed to say that she learned over the weekend that her maternal grandfather was on the USS Santee when it was attacked by a kamikaze pilot. He survived and lived a long life. She says she understands that this was one of the first aircraft carriers hit by a kamikaze plane. And I was trying to remember if you had a photo of the Santee in there in the book.
We don't have a photo of the Santee, but there is a big discussion of kamikaze, especially in the last chapter of the book, because we do have a section on the proposed invasion of mainland, the main island of Japan, and what it would take. And this was the argument that was going on whether they should drop the atomic bomb or they should invade the island of Japan. And one of the reasons, one of the things we found out is that Japanese had plans to use kamikaze in an enormously destructive way, and the Allies would have lost millions of soldiers due to kamikaze activity if there was an invasion of the mainland of Japan.
Yeah, and that's why we wound up dropping the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
That's right. So, I mean, all of that, of course, as you know, that was one of the biggest secrets of the war was the Manhattan Project. Mm. And it was originally in designed to take care of Nazi Germany. But by the time the bombs were created and ready to go, Germany had surrendered. And the war in the Pacific was still raging, and it was still you still had battles like Okinawa and Iwo Jima and so forth. So there were lots of humans being lost. There was a tremendous
battles.
Loss of life. Yeah, and they were getting closer and closer to bombing Japan, but it was the one thing that we bring out in the book is that the Japanese were fierce. Soldiers, and they believed in fighting to the death.
Well, invite our listeners to join in. If you have a question or comments or experience to share, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. Ron in La Crosse has something for us. Ron, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes, I just was impressed by the fact that just prior to the D-Day landing, the Allies wanted to fool the British or German radar into thinking that the main landing force would land at Point Calais.
Yeah.
And so what they did, they had one of their planes, probably a bomber, drop metallic what they call chaff,
yeah,
or metallic foil, and it would fly in a rectangular pattern. I repeat, this rectangular pattern as it slowly progressed towards Point Calais on the French coast to make the German radar people think that it was the main landing force for D-Day.
And you talk about, I believe you talk about that in the book, certainly about foil.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. The D-Day deceptions were just incredible. I mean, there's a famous quote from Winston Churchill that says, in wartime, truth is so precious that she should always be attended by a bodyguard of lies. And there were two secret operations for D-Day, and the covert operation was called Bodyguard. And that was a series of deceptions. The foil was part of it. The tinfoil flak, and we show a photograph of that being produced in Britain.
Yeah.
They were also, Patton had a phantom army that was in the Calais area, across from Calais. There was an actor who played, who looked just like Monty and was spotted in various places to make the Germans think that they might be attacking from the south. There were dummy paratroopers, which we show, which was incredible. My collector found this. They were dummies, and they were like firecrackers attached to them, and they were dropped from planes and at night, and they looked like paratroopers with, you know, shooting guns and so forth. And this was an unknown that people heard about it, but never saw this. And Ken Rendell found a collection of 10 of these at a flea market in Normandy, and they were the only 10 that were ever found. This is just incredible. We show that in the book. But they were also D-Day spies. They were spies that were part of an operation called Double Cross, where the Brits turned all the German spies or that they could find that came into Britain during the Battle of Britain into double agents. And some of these agents worked and some didn't, but they had the foresight. The British were the most advanced spy masters at that time.
Yeah, they definitely were. We're talking today with Neil Kagan about his book, The Secret History of World War II, Spies, Codebreakers, and Covert Operations, and having some fun doing it. Well, there's nothing covert about Jennifer Dargan. She's with me here in the studio right now to help me talk with you about our year-end membership drive here at Wisconsin Public Radio. You count on WPR for in-depth talk on issues, and we count on you to make these discussions go strong. Your gift right now makes a big difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
It does make a big difference because we have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $2,500 in effect right now, and it's a fabulous time to pledge because 9XM Leadership Circle members, including Dale and Winnie Hutchins from De Pere, will double every dollar that you give. It's their way of inspiring you to support WPR. So please double the impact of your pledge right now at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
I bet you've been enjoying this conversation today with editor and author Neil Kagan about the secret history of World War II, and I think it's a good example of an interesting and informative conversation we have on this show.
Oh my gosh, my jaw dropped when I heard about the belt buckle that turns into a pistol. So now, if you enjoyed this conversation and all the conversations we bring you on the Ideas Network, take just a few minutes to make this program possible. Choose a gift that works for you and then make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And I think the beauty of making a voluntary donation is that you decide how much to give, because how much you give is as important as the fact that you do give.
Right.
It isn't as important.
Right. And since contributing is your choice, and because WPR is something you value, you're going to probably find that donating feels really good. So find out right now and get your pledge matched at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
WPR has been around a long time because we're committed to quality, and since listener donations make up the single largest piece of our budget, that quality is possible thanks to you.
Thank you. Your contribution makes this program possible, and so many others as well. You're actually part of the quality you hear every day. How cool is that?
Yeah, very cool.
You're part of that when you donate at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Andreka, and I live in Madison. WPR is a great value. Of course, it's free if you can't afford it. But I find that donating makes me feel better because I'm supporting something for people who maybe can't donate right now. And if you are a donor, I really think it's important to become a sustainer. You never have to worry about, oh, God, should I write the check this year or not? It's there, it's ongoing, they've got it in the pocket, and then you've got all that good stuff in your ears.
Consider becoming a sustainer with a regular monthly gift. Visit WPR.org to get started now.
Make your donation in support of the programs you count on at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Larry Mueller here with Jennifer Dargan, asking for your gift to listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio during our year-end membership drive. And maybe your pledge is $5 a month, maybe it's $100 a month. We appreciate and count on your gift.
Listeners to The Larry Mueller Show really have a strong sense of what it means to be a Wisconsinite, don't they? Chances are that Wisconsin Public Radio plays a really, really important role in that sense of identity and your sense of identity as a Wisconsinite. We serve the entire state.
And on Wisconsin Public Radio, you get news, voices, music, sounds from around the state. Over time, all these broadcasts add up to a strong sense of connection to the state that we call home.
Wisconsin Public Radio, it's a home that we all share, and it's funded in large part by listeners, by you. So give now at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
We have a dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now. Got about $1,900 to go. It's from our 9XM Leadership Circle members, including Dale and Winnie Hutchins from De Pere. Your gift of $50 turns into $100. Your $100 gift turns into $200. So take advantage of this match and double your support for WPR programs when you give right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And that match is around until noon. In other words, for the next 20 minutes only. So let's not let any of that money lay on the table. Here's something you could do. You could get your money matched right now if you make a donation to Wisconsin Public Radio. Dollar for dollar match going on right now. Then you can go to your employer and find out if your employer will also match your donation. Mm-hmm. Many human resources departments have the forms you need to double or even sometimes triple your match.
So even retired employees can find sometimes?
Yes. Even retired employees can do that too.
All right. Pledge right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, and then find out if you can get your pledge doubled by your employer.
There's so many important and interesting issues covered on the Ideas Network every day of the year, and you rely on these discussions. And that's why your gift during our year-end membership drive is so important.
Help us put a strong finish on 2016 so we can continue to bring the issues and talk in the months to come. Make your gift at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
We want to get back to that conversation, but just another reminder that the dollar-for-dollar match is still in effect. We still have about, just under $2,000 to be matched. So give now at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552, and your support of WPR is going to go twice as far.
It's the season of giving. I hope you'll support the program and the radio you love. And do something extra. Choose one of the food bank gifts when you give $5, $10, or $20 a month. Give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network, taking a look at the secret history of World War II. That's the title of the book, The Secret History of World War II, Spies, Codebreakers, and Covert Operations. It's a National Geographic book edited by our guest today, Neil Kagan. And he knows a lot about what's going on, what went on during that time, of course, given all of his work on the book. And I'm inviting you to join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. Certainly love to hear from you. And Neil, let's take a call. Katie in Milwaukee has something for us. Katie, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I just wanted to mention my dad was a Pearl Harbor veteran. He was a 17-year-old sailor stationed on the destroyer.
Oh.
And that was his morning liberty.
Oh, so he wasn't on the ship?
No, he wasn't. Well, he was on the ship getting ready to go off the ship. He was only 17 years old, and his best friend from Great Lakes was killed on the Arizona that morning. And, you know, he spent the entire war in the Pacific Theater. And, of course, just like your guest had mentioned, he had always maintained that the only reason he lived is because we dropped the bomb.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway, yeah. But my question was that he said they had all been out on maneuvers before that with the aircraft carriers. Obviously, destroyers go along, too. And he said that not all of them had come back into the harbor, and that the sailors had maintained that they thought it would be the Philippines versus Hawaii, obviously. You know, no one thought that
right. The
Japanese would attack there. What does your guest have to say about that?
Yeah, you've got quite a bit to say about that whole operation, Neil, don't you?
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I think that the intelligence operations in the United States at that point thought that an attack was imminent, but they thought it was going to be in the Far East, in the Philippines, or in some other areas, because there were British colonies and Dutch colonies that were also kind of vulnerable. They never thought it would be Pearl Harbor, but there were numerous signs that it could have been Pearl Harbor. And the Americans had already broken the Japanese political code, but not the naval code. So any communication between Tokyo and Washington was already being read. But some of the messages that had to do with the attack were not read till Monday morning. They were not translated till Monday morning. So we did miss some opportunities. There was also a questionnaire which a double agent brought to the United States and showed to the FBI, and they just thought it was too good to be true. And the German questions were all about Pearl Harbor, and it was all about did they have nets for torpedoes or to block submarines from coming into the harbor and so forth, and it was completely turned away as kind of a trumped up thing. So there were numerous opportunities that were missed for Pearl Harbor, and it was a true tragedy. The Japanese broke what they call radio communications as they got closer to getting their carriers in position to bomb Pearl Harbor. So any kind of radio traffic that would normally be picked up was missed. And they had 400 planes attacking that Sunday morning. They also, it was very interesting, there was both a Japanese spy in Pearl Harbor and a German spy family in Pearl Harbor that were both feeding information to the Japanese consulate in Pearl Harbor that was going back to Tokyo and saying, yes, you know, the ships are still in harbor. Now, luckily, three of the carriers were out. Two were out on maneuvers, and one was in San Diego being repaired. And that allowed, they were not attacked, and that allowed the U.S. to rebuild and to retake a position of dominance in the Pacific. But it was truly the code breakers that made the difference. The code breakers after the attack of Pearl Harbor worked day and night to break the Japanese naval code, which was extremely difficult. And there were no computers at the time. But the ships were out at sea, and they couldn't change their code books. So they were able to tell the kind of pattern of the radio operators, and they were able to decipher a few words. And pretty soon they could interpret a third of a message, and they were able to piece together things and finally determine that the next big move after Pearl Harbor was going to be the Midway, and they put the U.S. fleet was in position for Midway Island, which was not too far from Pearl Harbor, and surprised the Japanese and turned the war around.
Yeah.
And that was due to the code breakers.
Yeah, amazing. And Katie, thank you again for calling. Appreciate it. I want to give Madeline and DePere a chance to join us. Madeline, hi. What's on your mind?
Hi. Well, I'm 75 years old, but back in the 1970s, I tape recorded a number of Oneida elders. I'm a member of the Oneida tribe. And one of them, his name was Amos Christian. And anyway, he talked about his World War II experience during his story. And he was one of his jobs was to check the degaussing on the ship. And he talked about, you know, you talked about them using fake things. It almost seems, it's been so long since I listened to that CD, but it almost seems like there was a part where he said, like they would actually have, like ships that were not real ships.
Fake ships.
Yeah. And also, I had no idea that there were Oneidas who were code talkers, because you always heard about the Navajo code talkers. If had I known that, I would have been right on that. Anyway, I donated all those recordings to the Oneida tribe. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, very interesting.
But both very, very, very good points. There were a number of kind of dummy aircraft, dummy ships, dummy tanks that made out of rubber and so forth that were associated with the D-Day, with the D-Day deception. And that was an incredible enterprise. And the other thing that was interesting with the code talkers were that the Navajo were the most famous, but there were other code talkers that were also active during the Normandy invasion. So you had code talkers in both Europe and in the Pacific. And the Japanese and the Germans tried to master all of the languages spoken in America, but they never could master the Indian languages. And it was just an incredible thing that these code talkers could communicate, and what they said could not be understood. It was just phenomenal.
Just an absolutely amazing, amazing thing. Neil Kagan, our guest today, he is the editor of the book, The Secret History of World War II. I'm finding it fascinating. Jill Nadeau, my producer, as well, she's got going on it. It was really hard to turn it to not turn the next page because there are so many great stories and so many great photos as well that really tell the story. It's a fascinating read. Larry Mueller here, by the way. Jennifer Dargan joining me again, and we're in our year-end membership drive here on Wisconsin Public Radio, and we're certainly asking your financial support. It's the foundation for all the great discussions you enjoy on the Ideas Network every day. So I hope you'll make a gift right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And Larry, great news to report. We just met our dollar-for-dollar match that we were trying to reach this hour.
Excellent.
So it's our time to say thank you to the 9XM Leadership Circle members that made that possible, including Dale and Winnie Hutchins from DePere. Thank you so much for that.
It's their way of inspiring you to support WPR. You can, I hope you'll give. We've met our goal, but I tell you what, we have an overall goal that we haven't met yet.
The pledge drive just beginning.
Just beginning. So I hope you'll pledge right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You know, Larry and his guests cover so many topics that touch our lives, from health, self-improvement, home improvement, wildlife history. The list goes on and on and on, and you don't get a show like this anywhere else. This show is possible, pledge by pledge, and only on listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio. Please give now at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
You connect with WPR for information, for great conversations and entertainment. 9XM leadership gifts of $100 a month or more are just critical in supporting that connection. And for you and for others across the state.
Yeah, keep our connection strong to you and all WPR listeners with a leadership gift of $100 or more at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
You've accomplished a lot this year.
So a big accomplishment this year is we went on our very first family vacation to Mount Rushmore, and it worked.
As far as big accomplishments this year, probably the biggest one, my wife and I bought our first house.
Well, one of the things I've really wanted to achieve in the last year is I really wanted to become a better cook.
I got to sing the national anthem and the halftime show at Lambeau Field with my chorus the night that the Packers beat the Bears.
End this year with one final accomplishment by supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. Your tax-deductible gift makes the radio service you rely on possible. Make your year-end contribution to WPR right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Pledge right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. I'm Larry Mueller with Jennifer Dargan asking for your support of WPR during our year-end membership drive. And let's say your gift is $10 a month, maybe it's $20 a month, whatever amount you choose, that is the right amount.
Mm-hmm. And a great way to support WPR is by becoming a sustaining member. And speaking from personal experience as a proud sustaining member myself, it's so easy to set up. You make your monthly donations right from your bank account or your credit card.
Many people give $10 or $15 or $20 a month, but of course, you choose whatever amount is right for you. Become a sustainer right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Larry, we got a donation earlier from Jared from Prairie du Sac, who said five of the presets on his car are set to WPR, and they are first-time givers and said it feels so great. WPR exists because people contribute. It's as simple as that. When we all give, our contributions add up to make this program possible. Your contribution really does make a difference.
So give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. It's as simple as that. One pledge at a time, you make the station possible.
We heard from Jordan from La Crosse also, who pledged and said, I've been an avid listener for quite some time now and appreciate the knowledge and topics covered on a daily basis. Thank you so much, Jordan. Now, how about you next at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
If you've been listening to WPR for a while without pledging, maybe you haven't given because you didn't know that we're listener-supported. Well, we certainly are. The single largest piece of our budget comes from listeners. Or maybe you wanted to listen for a while to see if you liked what you heard.
You're testing us out, are you?
Yeah.
Well, you're still listening all these months and years later. How about a donation now? Now's the time. Today's the day. Your gift of $5 or $10 a month, whatever amount that you choose, makes a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Join your friends and neighbors who believe in the value of WPR and believe in supporting it. It takes the support of everyone who listens to make this radio station as good as it can be.
Mm-hmm. And when you make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, you'll be doing your part to make sure that the news and information you need is here every day.
So I hope you'll give now. If you haven't given yet, this is really a good time to do it as we get to the top of the hour. Think about the amount that you want to give and then make your contribution. It's easy. Just go to WPR.org or you can phone 888-202-2552 and make your support of Wisconsin Public Radio go a long way.
Mm-hmm. It's a season of giving, so you could support the radio that you love and do something a little extra. You can choose one of the food banks when you choose one of the food bank gifts, rather, when you give $5 or $10 or $20 a month. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And those gifts go to local food banks, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. Is that
food bank, right? In your area.
Food bank in your area. So when you contribute, you're also helping out food banks in your area. Well, I tell you what, this is really the time to do it. Support Wisconsin Public Radio right now. Contribute right now. You can go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Love to hear from you. If you haven't contributed yet, this is really a wonderful time to do it. We're in the kind of the first part of our drive right now.
Yeah, just started today. Hopefully, not going to be that long of a drive. We'll be done by Saturday evening. Mm-hmm. So don't delay. Time to make your pledge right now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And let me give you that once more in case we've been saying it too fast. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. We'll be back with our guest, Neil Kagan, after this quick look at the news. Stay with us. Taking a look at the secrets of World War II today. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you join us on the Ideas Network. Our guest been doing a great job. Neil Kagan, he is the editor of this great new book. It's called The Secret History of World War II, Spies, Codebreakers, and Covert Operations. Lots of great stories. And I think he said, Neil, did you say over 700 photos?
It's 700 photos, that's right. They're all kind of evidence of the secret war.
Yeah, it's really amazing. You may have some questions for him. I hope you'll join us at 800-642-1234. Email at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Jack in Eau Claire has something. Jack, hello.
Hi, I love this show. Can't wait to read the book. My dad is a World War II vet, and one of his best friends was the skipper of either like a minesweeper or a destroyer escort or something like that in the Pacific. And their role in the planned invasion of Japan was that his ship, which was a pretty tiny ship, was going to be part of a decoy task force where these small minesweepers or destroyer escorts were going to be camouflaged to look like aircraft carriers from the sky.
Ah.
And it was like a suicide mission. They had to volunteer for it, and they couldn't talk about it for years after the war. And I'm just wondering if your guest had heard anything about that particular operation.
Hmm.
You know, that's an incredible story. I have not heard about that, and it doesn't surprise me. What's very interesting about this is that you think of the armies of brave people that fought the war. There was an equally large army of people behind the scenes dreaming up these type of events. And there were people who were volunteering for them. So it was truly the last of the truly heroic moments for America. I mean, it everybody on the home front and in the field were pitching, were trying to it was good against evil.
Yeah, it really was. Thank you so much, Jack, for that. Appreciate it. We had, and you know, there is a Wisconsin woman that I know for sure featured in your book. And I'm, oh my goodness, I'm blanking on her name now.
Mildred Harnick,
that's right.
Right. She was part of an operation in Berlin called the Red Orchestra. And the Red Orchestra was a resistance group that were trying to feed Moscow information on military activity that was taking place in Berlin. And if you had any idea of how difficult that was, it was amazing. Now, Mildred was an English teacher in Berlin, and as the war took over, she got caught up in this web, and her husband was a big player in the Red Orchestra, and they called it an orchestra because the piano players were really the radio operators, and they were eventually all discovered and murdered by the Gestapo.
It was amazing to me, that whole story about those. They must have known that they were going to get caught, because the Gestapo had a way of zeroing or homing in on the radio transmissions. You wrote about that in the book, and I remember one of the sentences that you had in there was that one of those radio people would the average lifespan was about a month.
Yeah, it was an incredible endeavor, and I think that a lot of the spies that were sent over from Britain and the United States were women. And they were dropped from airplanes starting in 1942 to work with resistance groups behind the scenes. And it was the first time that women participated in this type of espionage. And they were less conspicuous than men, but they were in extreme danger. They wore cyanide necklaces. They carried guns. They had suitcase radios, and they worked with, and they were fluent in whatever the native language of the country that they were dropped into, like France. So they could blend in, and it was an incredible experience. And many were caught, and many ended up in concentration camps.
Yeah, the British agent. The woman, Noor Khan, which I thought was really a cool name for an agent, to be perfectly honest, but she was an amazing agent as well. There were a number of women that you highlight in one of the chapters. I thought, just, oh my goodness, these women, I mean, they knew they could get easily be shot.
Yeah, this was an enterprise where they knew it was almost a death sentence to begin with. But as I said, the world was united. It was a good against evil thing, and they were dropped in behind enemy lines. They were they forged new relationships. They were being watched all the time. They were just incredible stories. Another story we tell is about the assassination of
Heydrich?
Yes, Reinhard Heydrich. This is, again, one of the most surprising stories in the book. He was really third in command behind Hitler and Himmler, and he had ambitions to actually become Hitler's heir apparent. He was the Nazis' Nazi, and he was the head of the SS, and he was an absolutely ruthless person. But on top of being a ruthless Nazi, he was also an incredible administrator. Among the things that he was famous for was organizing the Wannsee Conference, which set forth another big secret in the war, which was the final solution of the Jews in Europe, the Holocaust. And before that, there was a Holocaust by bullets in the Ukraine, and they wanted to be more efficient about it. So they created this series of train lines that would run into Polish camps, and created death camps. And he was the head. He also headed up the protectorate of Czechoslovakia, and the Czechoslovakian army that was in Britain. They came up with a with a plan to drop two commandos into Czechoslovakia and to assassinate Heydrich, which is a story we tell, which is an incredible story of incredible
bravery,
bravery and also betrayal.
Yeah, yeah, it amazing. Wallace and Weyerhaeuser, thank you for joining us. Hello.
Hi, Larry and Neil. Maybe this story is just a little bit off of your code, you know, and secrecy. But I am just wondering how many people. Neil, did you get this in your book about the Japanese subs that they designed to launch aircraft?
Yes, we did.
There's actually a photo in the book, I believe, of...
That's right. Yeah, that was an amazing thing because Yamamoto, Admiral Yamamoto, who planned the Pearl Harbor attack, was the mastermind behind those subs. They were submarines that were large enough to carry, I think, three or four aircraft that were bombers. And they produced two of these. Originally, they were going to create, I believe, about seven, a whole fleet of them. And the idea was that these submarines were going to reach the west coast of the U.S. and bomb major cities. And the thing is that because of the when they were able to break the Japanese naval code and win the battle at Midway, several months later, they were also able to use this same code to detect a mission that Yamamoto was on. And they were able to attack his plane, down that plane, and kill Yamamoto. With Yamamoto's death, the shape of the war in the Pacific changed completely. He was the mastermind, and they were able to use the code breaking for the death. So after he died, the support behind the subs started to wane, and the Japanese fell more into a defensive posture.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Wallace. Appreciate it, Chris in the Dells. Thank you for calling.
Hi, my father was a flight engineer on a bomber that flew out of Dover, England, across the English Channel into Nazi Germany and dropped spies behind Nazi lines. And they had to fly 3 feet off of the water and then jump hedgerows to avoid the radar in the war.
Wow. Yeah, they used special planes called Lysanders that were set up to drop spies into behind enemy lines, but also to drop propaganda, which they call black propaganda, because some of the propaganda was designed to make it look like it was written by newspapers written by Germans, and that created a lot of chaos behind enemy lines. And the Lysanders would sometimes drop this propaganda in canisters. They would also drop weapons for resistors. It was really quite an operation. And again, one more example of bravery.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. Kim in New Glarus, thank you for calling.
Yes, my dad was one of the Normandy code crackers.
Oh,
incredible!
Yeah, did he ever talk about it?
No, they weren't allowed to. Up well into the 1980s, I had tried several times to get any information on him, and he went to his grave, never talking.
Oh, there's
that's not surprising. That was part of that generation, you know. They really didn't really talk about some of the things they did during the war.
Yeah, and you know that the whole business of breaking codes, you've got a lot of really great stories in there and photos as well of the Enigma machine that the Germans had, and then Alan Turing was the mathematician who kind of was the first guy to propose computers.
That's right. We have a chapter called Unlocking the Enigma Code, and it really shows you, it really truly is the first time where you could say man versus machine, or in some cases woman versus machine, because there were some excellent women code breakers. Bletchley Park, where Alan Turing worked, was the brain center. But there were also Americans involved. There were also Earlier, they were Polish code breakers that started the pioneering work on breaking the Enigma code. We show a variety of Enigma code, Enigma machines. We talk about how the code was broken. It was truly the precursor to the modern computer, and Turing was a real genius. There's no doubt.
No doubt about it. Neil Kagan, our guest today. What a fascinating book. It's called The Secret History of World War II, Spies, Codebreakers, and Covert Operations. It's published by National Geographic, and the photos are incredible, and the stories are equally incredible. And it's really great to have Neil Kagan with us today to talk about the book, and I really hope you get a chance to look at it. I'm Larry Mueller, by the way. Jennifer Dargan joins us. We're on our year-end membership drive. It's your chance to support the WPR programs you count on every day, the programs that keep you in touch, informed, and interested. Sometimes we look ahead, and sometimes we look back, like we did today at World War II. Your gift now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 is so important as we end this year and look forward to 2017.
Mm-hmm. And we want to thank the 30 members that pledged last hour. Thank you so much for those gifts. And right now, we are looking to get 8 pledges by 12:30. We can do this with your help.
Support the station you love and help us meet our goal when you give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
We really enjoyed the conversation about the secret history of World War II. So many interesting facts. And this is just one example of all of the interesting topics we have on this show.
So I hope you'll take a few minutes right now to make this program and many more programs possible. Choose a gift amount that works for you and then make your pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
The strength of WPR's budget is that it comes from lots of different sources. And the single largest piece of the budget is from all of the members that support Wisconsin Public Radio, including more than 700 members of our 9XM Leadership Circle.
9XM members support WPR with gifts of $100 a month or even more. Join that 9XM Leadership Circle right now if you can. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
Here at Wisconsin Public Radio, we've been partnering with food banks throughout Wisconsin since 2010 to help those in need. President and CEO of Second Harvest Food Bank, Dan Stein, shares the universal impact of hunger.
In the lines that we see veterans, we see seniors, we see people with physical ailments, we see families. There isn't one category, but the one thing they have in common is they're all struggling.
This drive, when you give $5, $10, or $20 a month, consider asking for a food bank thank you gift. It's your chance to do two good things at once.
Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 to make your pledge during this year-end membership drive. Larry Mueller with Jennifer Dargan asking for your support of WPR. And your gift, $10, $20 a month, whatever amount you choose, that's the right amount.
Help pay for the programs that you depend on. We're looking for 8 more pledges in the next about 8 minutes, and you can help. Make your donation right now in support of the programs that you enjoy at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You might wonder what your pledge pays for. Well, we have toll-free numbers, so you can call in your questions. We rely on newspapers, magazine subscriptions, the internet services, so that we can research the topics of the day, and all those things and so many more have costs associated with them. Your pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 helps to pay for them.
And if you've never given before, but you look forward to listening to WPR every day, that's really a sign it is time to donate. You know that WPR is important to you.
And you're important to us because
yes.
WPR is listener-supported radio. We count on financial support from people like you, people who rely on WPR to bring you something special every day. Your gift of $5 or $10 a month, or whatever amount that feels right to you, really does make a difference. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
So many people tell us that they just turn on WPR on their home radios and it just stays on all the time. It's your daily companion. We're on the air 24 hours a day, whether you are at home or in the car or at the office. And you can have us on whether you're concentrating or relaxing.
Like a good companion, you count on us for accurate news, for great music, and for intelligent conversation. We, in turn, count on you to support what you hear. And that's how Wisconsin Public Radio works. So I hope you'll give right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Okay, if you're listening 2 minutes ago and you heard me say we're looking for eight more pledges, or 3 minutes ago and you heard me say we're looking for eight more pledges, we're still looking for eight more pledges. You can be the hero right now. You can step up, you and seven others, and make this possible for us to reach our goal for the Larry Mueller Show on the first day of this pledge. Your gift supports the programs that you enjoy and rely on every day. So pledge right now, please, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. It really makes a difference.
And when you pledge, you'll be adding your voice to more than 50,000 members who support Wisconsin Public Radio. Your contribution, I don't care what the amount, it's pooled with other member contributions to make up the single largest piece of our budget.
And we use that money to bring you the programs that you hear every day. Make your pledge right now at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
And this year-end membership drive is a great time to make your year-end gift. It just takes a few minutes of your time. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. You will be done quickly, and you'll have that good feeling of supporting the station you've enjoyed all year long and that you're looking forward to in 2017.
Still looking for eight more pledges, and the clock is ticking for the last few minutes of this show. Your gift really makes a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And I think it's really cool, too, that during this pledge drive, you have a chance to do two good things at once. Choose one of the food bank gifts when you give $5 or $10 or $20 a month. Just give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And we heard from Shaylin from Madison who pledged and said, "Now that I've graduated from college and have a job, it feels great to give back to WPR for all of the hours of top quality content that it's given me over the years. Thank you."
Thank you very much. We have Jordan from La Crosse, who said, "I've been an avid listener for quite some time now. She appreciates the knowledge and topics that are covered on a daily basis." That's pretty cool, too.
Thank you for that pledge. Now, how about you next? WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Now is a great time to become a sustaining member. As we've said, it's easy to set up. It's convenient. We've got ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or your credit card. You can get started at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
We heard from Barbara from Superior, who pledged and said, "I'd like to give my congratulations for more international news on WPR." Well, thank you, Barbara. "I appreciate you bringing this information about India and other countries into the public domain. And more knowledge is better, and the music is wonderful, too." Well, thank you. How about you next? WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We'll be going away here pretty soon, so I tell you what, your gift, it's very, very powerful. It really does make a difference. Think about it, how much you want to give, and then please do it at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. We still got a little ways to go to reach our goal of eight. You can do it we can do it only with your help. So if you haven't given, please do it right now. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. And thank you so much for listening and for supporting us at Public Radio.